My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. Jeff Lerner, your host, always so excited to be back with you, having amazing conversations with amazing human beings. Today, we are joined by one Mike Koenig. So quick aside or maybe disclaimer, I'm a little bit fan geeky in this moment because Mike Koenig was one of my early inspirations when I first ventured into the world of digital entrepreneurship. I won't attempt to reduce him to merely, you know, the guy that I had metaphorically on my posters on my wall at the time. He's done so much more than just inspire little old me. He is a serial entrepreneur, 17-time number one best-selling author. I thought it was a big deal just to write a dang book. He's written 17 of them that have been at the top of lists. He's a speaker. He's an online personality. He's an influencer. I'm not even going to read his biography. I'm just going to go from what I like know of him. He's like this, Mike, maybe cover your ears. Don't get a big head. But like, he's like this savant-ish guy who I've seen him do so many different things really, really well. Like when I was getting started, he was, there weren't a lot of like, you know, WYSIWYG graphic user interface things that made tech easy back then. You kind of had to like fiddle with it. And he was like one of the first guys that was making tech really easy for people that could do really, to unlock the power of what you could do with it for people that didn't have technology backgrounds. I used multiple of his programs back in the day. But he's also got this crazy resume. He's done some bizarre things. He's a cancer survivor. That's not necessarily the bizarre thing. He's chanted in a sarcophagus in the Great Pyramids with Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer. He helped his wife make a documentary. Honestly, Mike, I feel like I'm not doing it justice. I just can we just talk and you can just tell us about all the cool stuff?
It's fun. You know, people are like, yeah, tell me your story. I'm like, I don't know where to start. You know, right. Tell me about you and then I'll tell you what's relevant. And, you know, my highest purpose is always collaborating anyway. I like making stuff with great people. And that's really what lights me up more than anything.
I think that was true of you. So I first came across you. I got started in November 2008 in affiliate marketing, and the program that I was involved in, it actually had some training modules and it integrated some of your programs. So I would have been exposed to you in 2009. And from what I remember of you in 2009, you were already collaborative because every time I saw you, you always had like one or two other featured experts or people that you were partnered with. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll ask you the same question everybody does. Like, where should we start?
Well, around then, I think what probably lit up my career was I was working with Tony Robbins and helping him out, and that just like snowballed. It was soon everyone was, you know, somehow kind of knew about me if you knew that business. But I guess the best place to start is usually in a way that's most relatable, which is, you know, what was wrong, what's been wrong, and how did you get past the hump in a way that's relevant for your audience. And I was telling you this before we started, that I probably reinvented myself 7 times. Dan Sullivan and I do a podcast called Capability Amplifier, and our first episode was, tell me about your reinventions. And it was like, most of them have been bookmarked with a business, but each one reached a point where, you know, you'd have some purpose and suddenly it wasn't purposeful anymore. And I think when the universe screams at you and says it's time to evolve, you either listen to it or terrible things happen. You know, it's when addictions occur or some sort of self-destructive behavior. And all of us are living inside an illusion and a hallucination or someone else's interpretation of our hallucination. So, and we're the worst at interpreting our own. You know, it's why coaches need coaches. Mm-hmm. And why I think the higher of a performer you are, the more support you need. And yesterday I spent the whole day with my good friend, John Assaraf, who's one of my walking buddies.
Sure.
And he's a profoundly interesting thinker. And we just worked on business stuff together. And it's always collaborative. It's never like, you do this for me and I'll do this for you. He just started pouring out genius material. And he gave me some really big insights that I'd never thought of before. And I walked out of there feeling as though I had what, you know, the natives would call or the Buddhists would call a death experience. You know, I didn't recognize the person I walked out with compared to the person I walked in with. And so I think everything should be a transformation. You know, if you're living a transformational life around transformational people, that's what lights me up. So I don't know if that gave you any more fuel for a better question, but let's keep on stacking until we get to a great destination.
No, honestly, I mean, that is the fuel, at least for me, what you said around, you know, when you start to run thin on purpose. And I think that word purpose, like, I mean, I shared with you a little before we hit record, and the audience, most of the audience will be, you know, familiar with this for me, that like my whole philosophy and foundation and even my whole business is around purpose-driven entrepreneurship and this concept of purpose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always say that, I always quote Mark Twain, the two most important days in a man's life are the day he's born and the day he figures out why. Yeah. That's the purpose. The day your purpose becomes clear, but we don't always get to choose. Like there's sort of this universal alchemy of like, well, you know, I will reveal your purpose to you once you've, you know, sufficiently suffered and endured and are battle ready for the revelation of purpose, because I'm not going to reveal it to you to make your life easier. I'm going to reveal it to you to tell you what your life is so hard for, so that you, and it's probably only going to get harder. But then like, you're right, because it does sort of ebb and flow. And actually, maybe I'll ask a philosophical question. Mm-hmm. You talk about when maybe you said in your life narrative, it's framed as business evolution, but it's obviously it's a lot deeper than that. But there's these moments where the clarity of purpose, either, I don't know if it becomes opaque or thin or what, and then you have to pivot. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you're going to, you know, die spiritually or literally or whatnot. Do you think that it's the purpose is ever changing, or do you feel like it's that in that moment, whatever you're doing has somehow been, you know, decoupled or veered off course from purpose, and so it's time to find some new way to get back on track?
Yeah, I think, you know, that old cliche statement, what got you here isn't going to get you there. I also think that there's little containers along the way, right? So if you fill up a certain container, you know, whether your interpretation, the hallucination I choose to agree with is that I think God says it's full, it's time to move on. And, you know, to create, like everything is about creation and as so above, so below, right? I mean, everything is a fractal upon itself and unto itself. And I think, you know, like as a child, you learn certain things and you see your parents a certain way. And then when you become a parent, you see yourself and your children a certain way. There's so many lessons. I think the more you absorb, becomes a multiplier for what you have to give and offer. And the more you think, the more you collaborate, the more you create. These are all expansive, like the nature of the universe is it's constantly expanding. And so I think ultimately all these things are tied together. And I think if you are going to live in the image of your creator, that's what you do. Creators create. And whether you're making babies or you're making art or making music or writing books or creating useful products, or you're just helping someone see the divine nature of themselves when they can't see it for themselves, those are all acts of deep spiritual work. And so, you know, what is a, you know, the chrysalis and the butterfly, or a chicken and an egg, right? The chick, it's got to get out of the shell. And I just think that the nature of evolution is what your previous evolution in some ways doesn't even remotely resemble your prior one, and so on and so forth. So we're constantly having to learn and relearn and see the universe through different eyes. At least that's been my experience.
So, so can I interject with another like kind of a, call it a paradigm question? You've said a couple things that are, a lot of the people I interview on the show or talk to on the show, I actually don't love the word interview. I just like to have conversations, but
yeah, what it's worth. I agree.
That a lot of the people I converse with on the show, I, you know, fairly aligned. We tend to be that way. But you've said a couple things where I'm like, ooh, that's beyond just like general alignment. That's almost like a little bit uncanny. And one of the things you talked about just now was that how, you know, creativity or being in a creation space, you described it sort of as reflective of our createdness in the image of a creator, which I align with that. But I'll just share with you, one of the things that I do that I think is unique within what I do is I try to apply like business logic to the totality of life. So I take all areas of life and break it into KPIs and, you know, key performance indicators and, you know, the whole like what you can't improve what you don't measure, right? And so measure everything and you can improve everything. But one of those is I take the professional arena of life and I organize it in what I call value channels. And my three particular value channels are finances, which is kind of how most people think of their professional life. And then there's authority, like your you know, call it ability to impact across space and population. But the third is creativity. That actually resonated for me a long time ago as like, and it came through my work as a coach, where I met a lot of people that seemed to have every other professional box checked, but they were miserable. And I said, and I would ask like, well, what have you created? What is it within your professional category that bears your unique fingerprint that someone can tell you were there and not someone else? And if they didn't have an answer to that, it usually aligned with this sort of inexplicable malaise. And so you're the first person I've talked about that's called out creativity so specifically in the context of their professional life as something intrinsic. So I love it.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, I'm fortunate enough that I married a divine being. Specifically, my wife is she is the daughter of Holocaust survivors. So she's a fascinating person. I also have the great joy of, I love my mother-in-law, and she just spent a bunch of time with us.
So you have a Jewish mother-in-law?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful.
I was raised Catholic. Yeah.
How and, archetypal.
Yes. Well, that's precisely it. And so, she's met with multiple seers. I don't know how to put it any other way, but way beyond fortune telling, I'll say. And what she often gets told is this is her last time around. You know, so if you believe in the concept of either reincarnation or energetic reuse or whatever it is, what they've told her multiple times is, you know, you've done your work. And she, about 18 years ago, she woke me up in the middle of the night and said, I hear babies screaming in Africa and I see them dying in Africa. I'm going to do something about it. And I was like, first of all, you just say yes to a woman like my wife. And so it wasn't too much later. She was in Africa partnering up with a Catholic nun, delivering babies by candlelight. And then that led into building a foundation, doing a bunch of philanthropic and work on the ground in Uganda, which now is in India. And she's saved tens of thousands of lives. And, you know, I think it came from her pain, right? Her generational pain of having no living relatives. And, growing up in a slum in New York, being horribly beaten and abused by her father, who just never got over, you know, he manifested a lot of pain that was inflicted on other people, right? And so her way of dealing with it, instead of caving into, you know, becoming an alcoholic or a drug user or worse, she decided to turn it into something profound. And, you know, I think part of the deep work that we need to do as human beings is to find a divine partner who matches us energetically. I think that's part of the quest And it's not just about creating things and creating wealth, although I like keeping score. It's about finding that union, that partnership, that missing piece, and meeting the divine through whatever pain, you know, your other half has been through. I think that's, I used this term a while ago. We're not human beings. To be a human being is one thing, but to be a human expression is something orders of magnitude more profound.
Well, you basically called out my marriage and what's so profound and special about it. This is, I've met that person. I mean, wow. I'll just say that. And we do.
How lucky
we do,
are you?
Yeah, and I've been married 3 times, so I actually have a basis for comparison.
Better get it right this time, huh, buddy?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's this time or I'm out. But no, I did. I mean, you know, third time's the charm. We lead the advanced events in our company, Entra. We actually get to lead them, and we do on-site, you know, hands-on transformational experiential work with our students, and getting to serve together. And you know, I can't always put it in these terms in the context of the work itself, because we're not a faith-based organization, but I mean, it's God's calling for our life. It's just is.
Right.
And we're so much better at it together than we could ever be individually.
How lucky are you, huh?
Okay. Let's, you know, I never know where these conversations are going to wind, but I love it. I love where
I didn't walk in with an agenda. So,
no, well, me neither. Let's talk more about, maybe take us back. Okay. Cause by the way, I love meeting the people that you had previously only known through usually through our marketing is how people, know guys like us. Right. So there's always so much more. And John Asaroff's another guy. I know John probably not as well as you, but I know him reasonably well. And again, there's just so many layers to great entrepreneurs so often. Take us back though. Maybe like I'm always interested, and I'll just ask the question directly. How did you become the person that could become Mike Koenigs that we know today?
Divine discontent. I hated being a kid. I hated where I was from. I was ashamed of my family. I had no good reason to. I always liked my dad a lot. My dad grew up very poor on a farm in Iowa. Youngest boy out of 8 kids, really beautiful family. And my mom is the product of a philandering alcoholic fireman and a bipolar mother. So, but they were great parents. I'm the oldest of four, and I was forced to go to Catholic school, and I hated it. Like, I never got along well with authority or rules. I'm not a good rule follower. And I grew up in a little tiny town where I felt like an alien, and I didn't know it at the time, but I had very, very severe ADHD. And my joke I often said is I was the kid who was last to be chosen to play baseball. And on the ninth inning, when they'd put me out to play in left field, I was catching moths with my glove as the ball rolled by and people were screaming at me. And I'd look up and go, what? You know, it was like I lived in a different universe.
Yeah.
Now, I was also, I had a lot of skills and talents that are not useful or recognized in school. Like I hated school, and I did everything I could to not go. All I ever wanted to do is write software. I taught myself to code when I was 14. I started my first business when I was 16. And my goal was to get the hell out of Eagle Lake, Minnesota. I just wanted to be a millionaire. And my way of expressing it is I figured out technology at an early age. I always had a knack for figuring out how things worked. I got that from my dad. He gave me access to all of his tools. So I learned how to build things and make things and take them apart and put them back together. We grew up hunting and fishing and raising food. So I had quality survival skills. And my dad, it was a barber, so he taught me how to communicate and talk to people. But as soon as I turned 18, I moved out, and I was financially independent when I was 16. The day I turned 16, I started working full time, and had my own little businesses. So I probably at any given time had 4 jobs at once until I started my first real company, which was one of the first digital marketing agencies. So I had good friends. I knew how to play a bunch of instruments, so I played in some bands, and but always busy, never had, I was happy, but not satisfied. Like, I just knew, I felt like I knew where I belonged, but I didn't know how to get there, and I didn't know how to be coached or be coachable. So it wasn't until, you know, many, many, many failures later, and learning how to navigate a brain like this, that I figured out how to tap into a certain type of genius, that I, you know, I don't feel embarrassed to say I've got a certain unique blend of a genius that's weird. But I think people like me oftentimes wind up either in prison or dead or addicts.
So my audience,
I've never said it quite like this before. So, no, I think I would have had the courage not that long ago.
I love it, man. I really appreciated your answer in a lot of ways, some of which we'll, you know, we'll talk about off the air, but like,
okay.
The audience is going to roll their eyes because, oh, this is the part where Jeff, you know, Jeff starts talking about words and word origins. I do this a lot, but you mentioned the word weird. I have to ask, do you know the etymology of the word weird?
I think I've heard it before, but help me out. I'm going to just no. Tell me the word origin. I bet you it's awesome.
It's one of my favorite words. So,
okay.
Cause I'm just full on weirdo, and proudly, especially once you understand the word, it's like, you're excited to be weird. So, it comes from W-Y-R-D, weird, weird. It's old English. And what it means is the ability to see and or change the future. And so like you might have heard, like, they'll talk about like weirding ways in like mysticism, like divinity, like divining.
Oh yeah, of course.
The divining gifts are the weirding ways. And so So what's cool about it is for most of human history, historically, anthropologically, the predestination concept is sort of, humans always think like their lot is fixed and, you know, the die is cast, right? And so it was very, for most of human history, it was actually a preposterous notion to suggest that you could actually influence your future by making different choices in the present.
Yeah.
So much so that they would burn people at the stake for it. Like, it was considered weird. But now that's what everybody's trying to do all the time. And yet we call it weird. And yet we're all trying so hard to be and constantly trying to shake off the shackle of our, you know, determined past. So be weird, man. Lean into it.
Yeah. I think so this is another thing. Like, I've got a 21-year-old, and he's weird like me in different ways though, but he also, something that he hated for a long time, and he's grown to appreciate it and not yet be okay with, but I think there's a state in your life when you truly know who you are and accept who you are with no exceptions, that's when you don't care what anyone thinks about you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can really, really embrace. So there's a difference between weird and the weirding way and freak, right?
Right.
And for the longest time, you know, someone, you know, either my son or my wife would say, well, what's going to so-and-so think? And I'd be like, I don't give 5 F's. Rhymes with truck, starts with an F, right? I don't give one, not even a little bit. I don't care what anyone thinks of me. Not even a little. I know who I am and I'm just fine. And it's not my job to be liked. I'd rather be effective And I'd rather be at peace with who I am. And I don't need more time to be happy. I've almost died of cancer. I know what it's like to endure a lot of physical pain and not know what's going to happen next. And I don't need more time to be happy. Quality matters. That's the only thing that matters. And I already got a bonus round. I'm 12 years into bonuses. So
yeah.
Now I don't want to leave because I feel a responsibility. And I happen to love this hallucination I live in. I love this illusion as long as it lasts. And it's delicious. I think learning to embrace that and just be okay with who you are. And I think that creates such, you know, you just like what we're having right now. I mean, we haven't spent intense time together. And in a way, this is a performance, right? But we're having a real conversation about real things, and it's not that common.
Yeah,
it's not common for men to have intimate, real, meaningful, deep conversations and be absolutely vulnerable.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, speaking, this is, I totally resonate around not caring what people think, and it's, I want to be really clear to the audience, not caring what people think is very different from not caring about people. I care deeply about people. And I know you care deeply about people.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually knowing that we care for people the best as who we are and who we were mm-hmm. created as, and not giving anyone else permission to impede that by caring what they think, so to speak, is at least how I sort of process mm-hmm. what you're saying. But I'll just speak for me, and maybe you can, you know, tell me where you are. I don't know how to do small talk anymore. Like I every now and then I find myself a little bit and I'm like, I just want to go to bed or mm-hmm. get on the computer. These are the only conversations I want to have. And I get to do transformational work with people all the time. Like I'm holding space for people and, mm-hmm. Absorbing energy and dealing with unpacking trauma. And like, I just feel so alive in a way that I like, do you ever find yourself, I don't know, maybe I'll just ask you, cause I feel like mm-hmm. we're similar. How do you deal with what passes for normal life in the world when it's so shallow?
I just get up and walk away.
Okay.
Quit caring. Yeah. I just have no tolerance for it anymore. I'll just say I have no interest. This is a relationship I have zero interest in participating in. And I'm going to take care of me because it's the right thing to do. And it's not you, it's me.
Did that shift dramatically after your cancer fight?
I think it kind of started. If you've ever heard of or read Louise Hay's You Can Heal Your Life book, that is essentially about the emotional causes of physical disease and how they manifest. And like liver disease or lung disease or heart disease are all diseases, emotional diseases, and they manifest. Now, that may or may not be true. I choose to believe it is mostly true. And I know people who have certain mental behaviors that seem to get themselves into certain physical situations, you know, how they're pain. And there's a person who basically he de-traumatizes physical pain by healing emotional pain. And I forget the guy's name right now. Joe Polish talks about him a lot. I just think there's a lot of truth to that. And so the answer to your question was, this has been a gradual thing. And I told you this right before the camera rolled that about 7 years ago or so, I had sold Traffic Geyser Instant Customer. I had started You Everywhere Now. And a lot of that business was dependent upon doing paid traffic to a webinar to sell a $2,000 information product, which led to a $5,000 live event, which led to a $25,000 mastermind, which led to blah, blah, blah. Escalation model, where the typical business model is it's a loss leader for two stages, and you monetized when you got people to your live thing. And that was like, it's in some ways doing live events and trainings and all that stuff is beautiful and elegant. It's a combination of art and psychology when it's done right and done with ethically, right? And we know the difference between the two. But at one point, I just felt dead inside. And I can remember when I had it my worst, I couldn't sleep. I was having anxiety attacks. And I remember looking up, I was, and you know, again, I'm not saying this to brag, but to illustrate, I had a place on the beach in La Jolla, California, one of the most beautiful places on the planet. I'm driving the car of my dreams at the time. I've got, you know, my wife and I had figured out a lot. I've got a kid, you know, like a lot of stuff's okay.
You had the life that everybody's fighting so hard to get.
Yeah. And that on paper looked good. And I remember seeing a dump truck drive by wishing it would run into me, because I was in so much pain that I could not explain. I could not articulate. And I didn't have the courage to talk about it, because my quality of life was dependent upon someone believing I was a guru. And if a guru didn't have his act together, then you'd be abandoned. And I was afraid that if word got out that I was such a wreck, so there was no, I couldn't be real.
Yeah.
And even the people I respected deeply who came to me for advice, I did not feel safe telling them how much pain I was in. And I didn't even know it. I just knew I felt wrong. And so I did some pretty intense, deep work. And eventually got through it. And it took a while. And I didn't realize it at the time. My hormone levels were jacked. And I had, you know, some anomalies in my blood. You know, it was like a bunch of stuff that had shown up. But again, you know, it's like the classic situation of a frog in boiling water, right?
Right.
I didn't know I was boiling to death. So back to answering your question, I think, you know, I evolved into it. But I remember one time, I was terrified that, like, I would quote unquote lose it all, but it's more visceral, more animal than that. And I can remember I was having a hard time catching my breath and breathing, and my wife, and I told her something, and she said, "You're a multimillionaire. If there's one thing I know about you, you can reinvent yourself. You'll figure this out. You could quit working. We'd be fine for years. And I don't need any of this anyway." And I had never given myself permission to even believe that to be true. So I'd been living inside a trauma loop probably for the better share of 30 years, which I believe to this day is probably a multi-generational trauma loop that was passed on through my family, you know, of origin. You know, I am the product of multiple generations of poor people and uneducated people, you know, high school educated and before that not educated. And I think that trauma gets passed on and we become sensitive to it. And, you know, a story gets passed on that we're not aware of.
Right.
So and anyone who's done plant medicine will know that also. If you've done your deep work and had a true ego death, you know what it's like to see the origins of the universe.
So, okay. So, oh God, there's so much rich soil here and only not enough time to till it all.
Do your best. I talk too much. There you go.
No. This is so good. So good. So the you talk about running inside a trauma loop for 30 years. And then you know, tie it to ego death. I feel like there's, and again, this is the work I do, right? Like a lot of, you know, people know, I'm sure you've lived this too, where like people think they know who you are, what you're about, what you're passionate about, what's important to you, why you do what you do, because they saw some ads with you in them or something, right? And it's like, yeah, you get whatever. To know the person, and it's I don't want to say it's deeper or better. It's just very, you know, often very different, right? Uh-huh. So, you know, a lot of people think I'm, you know, online business guy. And really, it's like, for me, the funnel, it's not, you talk about the ascension model. I'm not trying to ascend the economic value ladder, although as a practical matter, that's maybe how you have to build a business. I'm trying to ascend the depth of experience ladder with people, right? Like the reason I want them to click the ad to buy the little $7 thing is because someday I want to be like, you know, in a circle with them while they work mm-hmm. out, like you said, multi-generational, you know, epigenetic scarring from whatever. And that's what is my currency. So, yeah. But so often there's this, I'll call it like almost like a meta evolution of a human, right? Where they have, yep. we inherit and or experience things that create trauma loops. Yep. Those trauma loops drive us. They very often, you know, they manifest as like everything as assets and liabilities. Mm-hmm. Often when you meet people that have that drive, that intensity to do outlier things, it's very often driven by some amount of that trauma. And then often that gets them to a place where either existentially or experientially or for whatever reason, it's time to sort of face it, the crucible mm-hmm. moment. Then they face it, then they change. And truly what got them, it's not that what got them here won't get them there. It's that what got them here is transmuted into some new thing to take them elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times within that, they start to orient towards different currencies like purpose mm-hmm. and calling and service. Yeah. And mm-hmm. it sounds like you're describing your version of that. Hey there, it's Jeff. So real quick, I want to let you know about my text message community. I use text messages to provide unique value to the Unlock Your Potential community. These texts could just be random thoughts. It could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning, maybe giving an update on a special I'm running or some free training that I host for my community. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed to the list. The number is 702-996-3926. Again, that is 702-996-3926. Let's get back to the podcast.
I'm going to just say yes. It is every human hopefully gets to experience a hero's journey. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, I got to find these damn books, but there's and I know I'm going to butcher this, but just bear with me with the concept, because I know the concept is accurate. The words I'm using might not be.
I do want to say for everyone, yeah. like if you aren't familiar with the hero's journey, mm-hmm. go, you know, learn about Joseph Campbell and learn about the hero's journey. Yeah.
Star Wars. Yeah. Every great movie is a hero's journey. Right. You're like, Toy Story. What a hero's journey. Every great Pixar movie is a hero's journey. It's the birth and resurrection. You know, it's the Jesus Christ. It's the Christ myth, what's also known as the Christ myth. But apparently this is for masculine form. So I'm not speaking gender specific, even though I don't like going down that rabbit hole. But what's important is for the masculine journey, apparently around age 14, we have a Saturn phase. That is the proving time. And men who miss their Saturn phase have another opportunity to reach it again, usually around 27 to 30 something, and then again in their 40s. And, in our society, at least this now, especially worse now, there isn't a call to a calling that occurs. There isn't a phase where the brave goes out to have their first kill, their first hunt. And again, I'm speaking metaphorically, but also I think there's something to it. And a buddy of mine was just over for dinner last night, and he played this video of a woman talking about masculine and feminine relationships and how and she went on and on about paternal, not paternal. What's it called when you have a over masculine relationship? It's basically when men own women, but it's like not like
patriarchy.
That. Patriarchy. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But she basically was talking
that's
about
a hot word these days.
Oh yeah. But in this particular instance, she was using it in the sense that of embracing a certain kind of patriarchy, to serve one another because it's normal and it's to be celebrated. But she said something very profound that's either going to just spin someone in the right wrong direction or they're going to get it, which is it's her job to F the war out of her man. So to create a safe home.
Yeah. What that makes perfect sense.
It does to me as well. Yeah. It was like, holy cow, I'd never thought of that before. And it was like, because it's part of it is the feminine energy loves the strength and the power and the protection. And, you know, and part of her perspective, which I happen to agree with, is that we're so out of balance right now. But it also comes from the fact that there is no rite of passage. They've been destroyed by the state and by massive disinformation.
Well, and by society's generalized addiction to comfort.
Yeah.
I was raised Jewish. I was bar mitzvahed at 13. There was a time that or equivalent, you know, moments in human, you know, development, it was like some heavy shit that went on. You know what happened to me around my bar mitzvah?
No.
I got a bunch of presents. We sang, I like had to do some dorky thing in the temple for an hour and went to like read a speech that like I had proofread 9 times and there was no risk at all. And then we had a party in a hotel. I got some presents. The girl that I had a crush on rejected me and wouldn't dance with me. So I danced with another girl that I felt, you know, like, okay, whatever. Cause I don't want to be alone during Stairway with Heaven. It's 9 minutes. It'll be awkward. Like, this is the shit I remember when like hundreds or thousands of years ago, men, like you say, men were out like, okay, I'm going to, you know, 9 nights alone in the wilderness and I'm going to eat the buffalo or whatever. Right. Like we don't do that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's clear, you know, weak men create hard times.
Yeah.
And my son, you know, like he was raised with a Jewish identity. I married into the tribe. That was one of the agreements, which I've embraced. I always say the best way to add more joy is to add more Jews. Like I happen to love, Jewish identity. And I don't need to convert. Like I don't need to be part of anything. I just happen to love the experience, you know, the complexity of the culture. And my son was bar mitzvahed at the Great Wall and gave all his money to build a library in Uganda. And you'd think, holy crap, how profound. But, you know, he's a privileged kid, first generation raised where we didn't deny anything. And we suffer the consequences for that now. We gave him an easy life because we didn't. And so we did the disservice of what first generation wealth does to their children.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think these are not easy, except, you know, no matter what the cross you bear, that's what you focus on. And whatever you do with that, you know, it's an opportunity to focus on something, get to a destination and do something magnificent with it. And it's like we interpret our story and to interpret it with an ending that's meaningful to someone else is part of the gift. You know, you don't have to have had the worst life to be able to create profound change. I think it's just fine to be normal and not have lived through all that and not feel like you missed out on something. I don't recommend going through what I went through, nor going through what my parents went through or anyone else. You know, I'm not comparing anything. I'm very, very happy that I had what I had and that I've come to terms with it. And I hope I can give the same to my son.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously didn't suffer, you know, in that sense growing up, but I think that, you know, I totally agree with you. Like and I think this is a huge fallacy in parenting and in just like general human treatment of others, that somehow we have this obligation or morally justifiable imperative to create suffering for others,
yeah.
to like toughen them up or teach them some lesson, as you know, basically to play God with other people's pain.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
Because my experience is that the universe will take care. The universe will find a way to deliver whatever amount of suffering, whatever type of suffering is essential for a person's development without needing anybody else's help.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah. Isn't that true?
Yeah. Okay. So as we run short of time here,
yeah,
maybe let's come current for mm-hmm. Mike Koenigs, and you talk about whatever cross we have to bear at any given moment. I don't want to butcher a paraphrase, so I'll just say it in my words, but you know, essentially what I took from what you said was that there's this, opportunity, maybe a calling to be taking whatever it is that we're bearing in a moment and be trying to create or extract meaning from which we can learn and share with others. So mm-hmm. What is that for you right now, based on where you're headed? Do you have a sense?
Well, so we're at a phase right now. We're recently empty nesters. Our son is more or less on his own. We are building property in Baja, Mexico. Vivian and I love Mexico. We just love Latin America and the Baja specifically. So we're near Chip Conley's MEA, Modern Elder Academy.
Oh, yeah. I've had Chip on the show. I love Chip.
He's one of our favorite people. So we're a next door neighbor to him and developing nearby. And then we also are building a property in Malaga, Spain, where I have a couple of team members. So I've got an international team now. I've got developers in Poland and Germany and creative team in Spain. And we're working on building a lot more international relationships all over the place. And Vivian's foundation is self-sustaining at this point. She's lucky enough that a couple of her donors gave her NVIDIA stock. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, really.
So that's been taking care of itself in some ways. She, you know, after doing it almost 20 years, it is hard to raise money. And one thing I tell people who come in and they're like, oh yeah, and I'm gonna create a nonprofit. And I'm like, that's a horrible idea. And I can give you 100 reasons why you shouldn't. But one of them is it's more than a full-time job with a target on your back. And never remember or always remember that the IRS is not your friend, nor is the state. We are spending our time now creating our happily ever after, creating international deep relationships, as much purpose as possible, and spending as much time creating intimate relationships. And then I'm endlessly fascinated by writing books, creating products and content, collaborating. I speak a lot. I'm just heavy into AI. And I've never felt more creative or abundant than now. I wake up every day with a creative partner who can keep up with me. And it's fun. It's just fun.
It's incredible. Well, like I said, I guess in 2009, so 15 years, I've been tracking your journey. I will say, and I hope there's a thread of inspiration in this, that, you know, 15 years ago, I was a guy sitting at home, $500,000 in debt. I mean, it's such a cliche type of story now, but like,
yeah,
you know, just trying to learn some stuff. And I came across you and to think, okay, 15 years later, I'd be meeting you as a peer, you know, on my podcast. Like, it's just, I think there's a little bit of a fatalism in the world now. I was actually hearing, I was listening to Jordan Peterson this morning, I don't remember who he was talking to, but they were basically saying that like most people in the world today have fundamentally sort of given up. And oh, it was when they were talking about crypto and they were talking about all these meme coins and just the inflows into these meme coins where every, and it was, we saw it with NFTs a few years ago where everybody's like,
all the gambling.
We live in a society of gamblers now because they're like, well, if the odds are better than a lottery ticket, then I can, then it's better than a lottery ticket, right?
Yeah.
Because people find new friends. People
that's
just
what I
up.
Say. Yeah.
And I say that.
Yeah.
Like,
that's interesting.
There's real opportunity out there still. And if there wasn't, I wouldn't be here interviewing you, is my point.
Yeah. Well, here's, I don't have social media on my phone. So I don't touch it. I have other people doing it for me. I just filter and insulate myself from, you know, the way I tell it when I'm on stage, I'll say, I know the perfect way to not get sick. Don't lick toilets. So don't watch the news and, you know, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook are evil. X is also, I think YouTube is the least evil of the platforms. And I use it every day to learn and educate, but I do not allow anything to create a playlist that I absorb.
Yeah.
So I do not give my attention away. And those who are miserable gave their attention away and they don't value their time. When you don't value your time, you don't value your energy. You don't value anything. So, and you got to remember that those things are programmed to steal your time and sell you stuff. So advertising is for idiots. You know, anyone like to me, if you don't pay for YouTube, you're allowing someone to steal your time for the illusion of saving $20.
Right.
I value my time at $10,000 an hour. So I look at everything through hard black and white, and I do not live in the mushy middle. It's yes or no. There's no middle anymore, and I'm happier for it. I have hard rules. Now, I walk away from people, places, and things that create aggravation. So that's a longer story, and I know you got to wind this one down, but I think that's the deal is that line of thinking. I used to like Jordan Peterson, and I don't know if I respect him anymore.
Huh.
I think he's a miserable old man. There's nothing about him that seems joyful or happy. And I don't want to be around it. No, I respect him.
He's definitely carrying a load these days. I will give you that. Well, listen, I actually think that was a really profound note to end on, talking about not licking toilets and not being on the receiving end of algorithms that trade your attention. And that was pretty powerful. So let's leave it there. Mike, how can the world, I know you're not on social media, but you said you have a team that is.
Oh,
so
I'm
how
on
can the
it.
World go find
I'm
you?
I'm on it. I just don't, if you want to get to me, there's other ways to get to me, right? But I do pay attention to it. I just have someone else filtering it, so I don't spend my time there. Again, I can pay someone a lot less than $10,000 an hour to manage that stuff.
Right.
So I'm going to focus my energy on high value things. So how do you get hold of me? Like one of them, I have a platform right now I built that you can have a copy of my new book for free if you want. And this platform, it's called it's digitalcafe.ai, and it's a tool I built that will ask you questions and learn about you and then send you a digital synthetic mic who will talk to you, audio and a video. And it was designed as a marketing platform, but it's also a way I pay attention to every single content that comes through there and pay attention to what you talk about. And then you can have my book and an audio book for free. So, I think that's the way, is just let's start a conversation and you can meet me that way and I will see you.
That's very cool. Digitalcafe.ai.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Mike, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Any parting thoughts?
Well, first of all, thanks for just going deep and real right away. I didn't know what to expect because I did prepare and I thought about our conversation today, and it took a delightful twist I hadn't expected. And I want to just acknowledge you for being courageous and asking hard, deep questions and sharing yourself also. Exactly. And that's, it's really a gift to be raw and real.
I feel the same. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.
And to all you viewers and listeners, it is a gift. Be raw and real. No, as Mike alluded, no fucks given.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. That's right. No, seriously though, you are the best part of this show, all of you out there, and I'm so grateful for you. So glad we got to spend this time together. Can't wait to see you on the next one. Take care. Hey, it's Jeff here. So if you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast each week, please consider leaving us a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that our work is reaching people and it helps us grow our audience. In fact, your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, checks out the podcast, and unlocks their potential, levels up their entire quality of life. So thank you, thank you, thank you again so much for your support and for listening, and especially if you like or share or leave us a review. Thank you in general for just helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential and going out and making the world and your world a better place.